Let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go.
Must be the beginning of the week. Nothing works in the studio. Okay. Well, we'll get it worked out here
for the last show.
Yeah, I know, but now the internet's completely dead. So hopefully just got blank pages and it's just staring at me. So I don't know what to tell you. Hopefully the email will work. Okay. Welcome, kids. Nothing like getting thrown right into the fire right off the bat here on a Tuesday inside the playbook. You know, normally on Tuesdays, we do have what we like to call Nitpick Tuesday, and we're going to spend our time doing some of that today. But honestly, I don't think this Patriot team played as good a game as it could have. In fact, I would be willing to go out on a limb and say that I really don't think they played well at all on Sunday. They didn't play very well on Sunday, and still managed to win a football game. So in that regard, I think we have every reason to be, I don't want to say thankful, that's not the right word for it, encouraged by what we saw on Sunday in the 27-17 win over Miami. I don't think the Patriots played anywhere near their best football. The offense managed to sputter a bit again in the red zone, which is certainly one of my nitpicks today. The defense, that 10-minute-plus drive that Miami had in the third quarter on Sunday, to me was, well, for them, it was a thing of beauty. For the Patriots, it was just horrific. Somebody in that defense has got to stand up and make a play. And they couldn't get off the field. And there's no excuse. If you're a championship-caliber football team, I will maintain there is no excuse for anyone to drive the football for 10-plus minutes on you. I don't care how good they are. If you are a championship-caliber team, you need to have somebody step up and make a play and stop that drive. They couldn't get off on third down. What did Miami convert on that drive? 3-4 third downs? And the Patriots couldn't stop one. And third down conversion rate, you know, for the game I thought was terrible. I don't have it in front of me. I'll look it up here momentarily. Somebody probably has it in front of them and can share it here. But, frankly, I just did not think the team played. I did like the matchup in moving Vince Wilfork over in front of Long over on that side of the offensive line for Miami. And I thought that actually probably was a deciding factor in the linebackers being able to make as many plays as they did because he kept the guy tied up. And because of that, I thought that was a good strategic move by the Patriots to move Will Fork out of his normal, you know, tackle spot, especially without a guy like Jarvis Green available to go. Other than that, I didn't find anything defensively that I thought you could really hang your hat on. You know, and the team still kicked field goals rather than scored touchdowns in the red zone. And unless that problem somehow figures out a way to work itself out here over the next 4 weeks, this team is going to win maybe one game out of the next four. Whereas I think we decided this last week, did we not, kids? But we decided this last week that this team needs to win two out of the next four. Somehow, some way, they need to split the next four games. If the Patriots can split the next four and go 2-2, then I think they're, you know, not only, you know, will they win this division, which I think most everybody figures to be a fait accompli at this time right now, but this team would still have an opportunity, I think, to get a bye in the playoffs. But now you have to start watching Pittsburgh as well as Denver. You know, the other teams who are there with you in the standings at 6-2. This game this weekend against Indianapolis is huge when it comes to potential, you know, seeding implications in the playoffs. If you win this game, not only do you knock Indianapolis from the ranks of the unbeaten, you pull within a game of them over on the standings, and you have the tiebreaker. You have a potential tiebreaker with them. So you have things on your side. You have things on your side. You have things going for you. I know that last week was a divisional game, and certainly you have to win the division games, and they did that. But now this next week against Indianapolis is obviously the next big game. While the Jets game will be big because they've already beaten you once, and they are two games behind you in the standings, I don't think you want to give them any chance to feel like they can catch you. But there's no doubt in my mind that this game against the Colts is much bigger than the game against the Saints. I would argue that it's probably even bigger than the rematch at Miami, you know, at the end of the month. Or what is that, 1st of December. I would say this game and then the following game against the Jets are the two biggest games, in fact, that they have remaining on their schedule. Period. End of story. Do you agree or disagree with that sentiment? Webradio at Patriots.com is how you reach us here on the program. Webradio at Patriots.com, 508-543-7482. That's our telephone number. 508-543-7482. So that's, you know, item number one on the agenda for today. I really, the more that I've thought about this, I really believe that this week and next week against the Jets are the two biggest games that they have left on the schedule, above all, for the aforementioned reasons. Playoffs, seedings, potential buys, division, these next two games. If they can win these next two, I don't think that they'll lose to both New Orleans and Miami, although even though they could, and even if they did, they would still be, what, 8-4 at that stretch, or 7-4, and then a chance to finish out strongly. So, let's see, they're 6-2, 7-2, be 8-2. Yeah, they'd be 8-4, right, 8-4. So, and then they'd have every opportunity to finish out strong and win four in a row. Now, there, of course, will be, you know, a problematic game, I think, later in the year. Carolina's shown that penchant for running the football lately. Houston is certainly not the same old Houston Texans, and they could very well be fighting for a playoff spot, needing a win at the end of the year, and that game could be exceedingly difficult, but it may not mean a lot to the Patriots. There's too much football still to be played. But this week against the Colts and the following week against the Jets, no doubt in my mind, in terms of the importance of those two games. All right, so where are your nitpicks? I've given you what I think already are my major nitpicks. The defense, I thought, was less than spectacular, even though I did like that matchup with Will Fork at the end. The team didn't seem to be connecting on all cylinders. Randy Moss had a fabulous game. Brady was okay. Lawrence Maroney even was okay. But this football team managed to kick field goals rather than punch scores into the end zone once they get into the red zone again. That's going to be their undoing. That's going to ultimately be their undoing. Unless they can figure out a way to figure all that out. But my main nitpick has to be the play of the defense. I just didn't think that they stood up extremely well to a team that they should have stood up better to. Frankly, when I saw the Dolphins come out, you know, in a couple of their wildcat formations, you know, when Pat White was in there, we talked about this last week, did we not? On this very program, I believe we talked about Pat White coming in at quarterback, and a few of you even suggested via email that Pat White would probably be the secret weapon or the new wrinkle that the Dolphins would unveil in the Wildcat, which he was. But the new wrinkle that they ran was running pure option offense, zone read option offense, like you see in the college game. That's what we saw. We even saw them line up, I think it was twice, in what is known as the pistol formation. Did you see him when he was in a shotgun? It was a shallow shotgun, and he had a running back lined up behind him rather than to his side. That's what is known in the college game as the pistol formation. Get it? Pistol as opposed to shotgun? Yeah, a little smaller, right? Okay, there you go. They call it the pistol, and they do that largely to give the running backs an opportunity to get up a full head of steam and run downhill on people. It's exactly what the pistol does. That's right. Same principle involved. Like you shot out of a gun. Just get a little bit of mojo going behind you, and boom, you're out.
Shot out of a pistol, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. And we saw them do that. And we saw a couple of option pitches. Ricky Williams scored in an option pitch for a touchdown. I mean, you know, they're saying after the game that they knew that this was coming. They practiced against the option, and yet they still couldn't stop it. I think that's a little disconcerting.
You know what my theory is on the option?
Yes.
From the game?
What is it?
Their defensive coordinator, this is my Syracuse homer kicking in, ready?
Oh, here we go.
Their defensive coordinator, Coach Paul Pasqualoni, used to be the head coach of the Syracuse Orange football team.
Should never have left.
I agree. And they were notorious for the option.
Oh, yeah.
That's all they ran.
They were an option-oriented team. Ask Donovan McNabb. You know, that's why there was some doubt whether or not he could convert to a, you know, drop-back quarterback. But it's all water under the bridge now. I frankly believe, and I know a lot of people don't think that option football has a place in the professional game. I think the Dolphins on Sunday proved that it does. Now, call me crazy. Okay, you're crazy. I think option has a place. You can't do it full-time. It's pretty clear to see you can't do it full-time because the players are just too strong and too fast more than anything else. A steady diet of option is, number one, going to get your quarterback killed or your running back killed. And number two, you're not going to get anything off of it simply because players are going to have it, you know, primarily defensed properly. They make a heck of a lot of ground much more quickly than your normal run-of-the-mill collegians can make up ground. But the Dolphins proved to me on Sunday that it's got a place, whether it's in a Wildcat package or not. There is a place for it. And frankly, I applaud Miami for showing some intuitive, creative, back-to-the-future type of offensive formations and sets. I mean, the Wildcat, everybody knows, is nothing more than a single wing, which was, you know, the staple in all of football back in the 1930s to 40s. And certainly earlier, that's all you did was a direct snap to someone who took off with the football before the forward pass really became prevalent in this game. The Wildcat is nothing more than pure single-wing football. You just take off and run, the other guys block, and you just try to make them miss you. That's all there is to it. But when you add different elements to the single wing, for instance, a guy like Pat White, who I think was a steal for the Dolphins, being drafted out of West Virginia, here's a guy who can run. Here's a guy who does know how to hand it off, who does know how to read an option, and a guy who can throw the football and did so very well during his collegiate career. He's got all of the elements. Now, he's not a very big guy, but he's extremely fast. And if you're going to commit to running that kind of offense and you're going to commit to having that package as a part of how you're going to, you know, try to attack your opponent, then you should at least have the personnel involved that can run it. And Miami went and did that. They have two of the best running backs in the game still, in Ronnie Brown and Ricky Williams. They have an option zone read quarterback in Pat White. They have a drop back passer in Chad Henne. You know, they've got all the elements. Could Pat White come in and replace Henne if he was hurt? Yeah, I think so. I think he's capable. He probably still has to work on his accuracy somewhat in his arm strength, but I think he's capable. And, you know, what better place to be a backup quarterback than Miami when you know you're going to get probably anywhere from 6 to 10 snaps a ball game anyway, when normally your backup quarterback, all he does is hold a chart on the sideline. And he never sees any play. But yet you're a backup quarterback and you're going to get 6 to 10 snaps a game? That's beautiful. Plus, you force the other team to game plan for you. I know I realize I sound like I'm singing Miami's praises. The Patriots did win the game. I know that. But I'm kind of, again, this is Nitpick Tuesday. I'm picking nits here, kids. I like the ingenuity. I am a huge fan of the college game, as many of you know. And I like it when someone kind of flies in the face of, and this goes right up against basically everything I believe. I'm very, very old school. But I don't consider myself NFL old school. I like ingenuity, and I like new things in football. I like to see people try things. And this really isn't a new thing. We realize that option football has been around since the 1960s. And then, of course, the 1970s was the decade when, you know, the wishbone and the veer option offenses were prevalent in the college game. And even in the 1970s, I remember growing up and hearing, you know, people say, well, why can't you do that in the NFL? And it's because, well, because your quarterback eventually would get killed, because in an option play, the quarterback has to make a split-second decision whether or not to hand off, keep it, or pitch it. And as he makes those decisions, unless he hands off to the first back through the hole, he's going to get hammered on every play. If he pitches or he keeps, he's going to get hammered. Especially if he pitches, he's going to get hammered. In the NFL, your defensive linemen, your outside linebackers, they're going to have these pitch men covered because of their ability to go sideline to sideline. They've got better speed now than they've ever had at any time in the history of professional football. Guys have the ability to make up plays that you can't do in the college game. You don't even see the option that much in college anymore. You see that zone read out of the shotgun, again, because largely defenses aren't as quick to react as they are in the NFL. And with the spread option, West Virginia runs a spread option, Florida runs some spread option, Texas runs some spread option, teams that will spread it out and throw four and five wide at you, but they will also option the football, whether or not they hand off or the quarterback keeps it, or in a rare instance now make a pitch. And you see less and less teams run a pure pitch option offense simply because they get slaughtered on every play. The military academies do it because, frankly, it's easier for them to teach. Those guys are tough. The athletes aren't what you would consider highly recruited athletes. And because they know it's a pain in the ass to defense every week. So teams have to game plan specifically for playing the military academies who run option offenses. Navy was able to beat Notre Dame this last week because Notre Dame was just too stupid to adjust to Navy. And I frankly think that game cost Charlie Weiss's job as head coach at Notre Dame. You probably may have some thoughts on that as well, but I just think Charlie's I think he's done for. I don't know that there's any way he can possibly rebound unless, of course, you know, Notre Dame knocks off Pittsburgh this weekend, and I don't see that happening. Pittsburgh's just too physical a football team. But you see teams have some success with it because teams just don't want to care, and they just don't want to game plan. And that's what happened at Notre Dame this week against Navy. Largely inferior athletes beat superior athletes because Notre Dame did not prepare. That doesn't happen in the NFL. You don't have anybody at this level unless, of course, you're, you know, and even at the bottom levels of the league, you still prepare for your opponents. It's all about having the athletes. It's all about, you know, your draft picks and the people that you have on your 45-man active roster. But I like what Miami has done, and I like the fact that they've, you know, taken some steps to, you know, shake it up a little bit and include some different things in their offensive set. And shame on the Patriots for allowing, you know, a guy like Pat White to have 30 yards on a carry and these other guys to have some success. I mean, Ronnie Brown, I mean, left-handed little pitch pass, ugly as it's in, it was a touchdown pass. You had to know that was going to happen. Now, you can look at it one of two ways. You can either say shame on the Patriots defense for not doing a better job, or shame on the Miami offense for not being able to score more and do better with the personnel that they have, because I think they have the personnel to run that offense. Miami does need some help defensively. They need, you know, another linebacker to go along with Joey Porter, who, frankly, needs to keep his mouth shut. They need a younger version of a Jason Taylor to have some influence on the defensive line. And, yes, they've got to have some experience in the defensive backfield. Vontae Davis, I mean, we saw very, very quickly, he was an immediate target of Tom Brady and Randy Moss and Bill Belichick and Bill O'Brien and everybody else who's game planning over there on the Patriots sideline. And, frankly, that's what they should do. They should try to exploit that, and they did that. But give Miami two or three different players defensively. We talked with Armando Salguero of the Miami Herald earlier in the week, and he said if you put Brady and Moss and Welker on the Dolphins immediately become a Super Bowl contender. I don't disagree. But I would also tell you that if you could find, say, a Julius Peppers and for the defensive line, and you could find, say, maybe a, I don't know, for that matter, maybe even an Adalys Thomas at linebacker, and find a corner or two, but certainly a viable cornerback, that Miami defensively becomes much better. Miami becomes a team that has to be reckoned with in terms of the AFC supremacy. They're not far off. Tony Sparano and Bill Parcells are to be congratulated for, you know, the quick rebuilding job. It also tells me that Miami was not as bad. Certainly,
it's one of my homeboys.
Miami was not as bad as 1-15 would indicate. And I think we discussed that some last year, especially after they whipped the Patriots here 38-18. They won the division 11-5, and they won it fair and square. They were nowhere near as bad as 1-15 under Cam Cameron would indicate. Now they're, 3-5 this year? I don't even think they're as bad as 3-5 would indicate. They have underachieved a little bit, but they do have the pieces of the puzzle in place. And I think that's somewhat encouraging if you follow the Dolphins. And I guess part of my nitpick here is the fact that, well, you game plan on them, and they still manage to move the ball, and they still manage to score, and you still manage to struggle in the red zone, and I don't see a whole lot of difference. Am I completely blind? Tell me where I'm missing out here. I left the stadium here on Sunday with a sort of a taste in my mouth, you know? It's kind of like, I'm not sure I liked that. I'm not sure I'm real happy with it. I'm not sure that I saw progress. I don't think I saw regression, but I don't think I saw enough progress that I think this team needs to have for now being officially 6-2 and halfway through the season. Tell me if I'm off my rocker here. Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. Your nitpicks are welcome today. I've given you my big ones, and hopefully you have yours to share as well. There are some obviously other things to talk about in terms of superlatives from the game on Sunday. We always like to share these as well. We try to look at the glass half full, glass half empty, both of these things. Tom Brady had his 27th career 300-yard passing game. In fact, it's now three straight that he's thrown. He's never done more than three straight 300-yard games. He'll have a chance to break that record this week against the Colts. I frankly think he will. Randy Moss, the third player in NFL history to have 140 or more receiving touchdowns. He's now 57 behind Jerry Rice. You know, I thought initially that Randy would probably try to hang on until he could best Rice's record there. I'm not so sure he's going to have that opportunity, but I guess you never know. Moss is now seventh on the NFL's all-time receiving yards list. Passed Chris Carter this past weekend. And he is 24th in the NFL's all-time scrimmage yards list. It counts his yards rushing as well. Wes Welker becomes the sixth player in Patriots history with three straight seasons of 50 or more receptions. He had 9 catches on Sunday, which gives him now 55 for the season. He has his 13th game with 9 or more catches with the team, which is an incredible feat when you think about it. I mean, to me, Wes Welker, Randy Moss makes the big plays, Wes Welker's the MVP, in my estimation. He's on pace for 128 catches this year. We see some performance and some life from rookie Pat Chung. Huge sack on a blitz on third down in the first quarter to knock Miami out of field goal range. Steve Gostkowski tied his career high with 4 field goals, although he should probably only had 2. I can think of 2 where they busted in the red zone, and really that's my biggest nitpick is the offense. I mean, well, I can't say biggest. My biggest nitpick is the defense still, but if that's nitpick 1A is the offense's inability, again, to produce, you know, meaningful results in the opponent's red zone. They sputter way too much when they get inside the 20. Let's see. Moss over 100 yards receiving for the fourth time this year. He has 63 100-yard games. That's second to Jerry Rice's NFL record of 76 100-yard games.
Great cash, homie.
Yeah, he'll be holding his hand out for that. He has 39 touchdown catches in 40 games as a Patriot. I think that's a pretty cool number. And Tom Brady, as we mentioned, in addition to the 300-yard passing games in a row, he's now 20-0. 20 for his last 20. 20 straight starts at home, including the playoffs, that he has won as the starting quarterback.
Everyone sucks but me.
Yeah, pretty much. So, anywho, those are some good numbers that you can hang your hat on. And some nitpicks to talk about as well. Get you started. Webradio at Patriots.com, 508-543-7482. Yes, I know that there are some other news items going on today. In fact, the Patriots are in discussions on picking up a potential replacement player or picking up an additional offensive weapon. And we'll tell you about that coming up in just a couple of moments right here inside the playbook.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun and back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got Razor Sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game. I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
Right, so no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
Don't go yet, sir.
But the light turned green.
Well, you don't go till I say so. You play by my rules. My rules.
Ball start, loss of 5 yards, still first down.
What are you talking about?
Unsportsmanlike conduct, 10 yards.
Unsportsmanlike is 15 yards.
Move the chains!
You are a crossing guard.
Personal foul, 15 yards.
And stop blowing that whistle.
Think football, bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warmups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Delay of game,
but,
5 yards,
but
first down.
But you're not...
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services NA, Bank of America NA, member FDIC, copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
Welcome back inside the playbook for a Tuesday. It is game week Indianapolis for the New England Patriots. Pats will play at the Colts. Why does it always seem we play at the Colts? It happens every year, doesn't it?
Been a string of four there and four here.
Is that right? Well, we played the last 2 years, though, there, though, haven't we? You see, you're counting the playoff games, I think, as well, aren't you?
I'll confirm. I'll get back to you.
Yeah. I just seems, I don't know, maybe it's just me. It seems like we played there an inordinate amount. Nevertheless, that game will be this coming Sunday night, and obviously I know NBC is glad that they have the game, and it'll be the game that people will be waiting all weekend for, and all day on Sunday for, and hopefully it won't disappoint as the Patriots try to knock the Colts from the ranks of the unbeaten and creep a little closer in the overall best record spot in the AFC. Now, we'll spend a lot of time, obviously, throughout the course of the week dealing more with that, and a little bit of time today with that as well. But in addition to your nitpicks from the Miami game on Sunday, a couple of items. And frankly, when I heard that Kansas City had let Larry Johnson go, my initial, and this is as honest as I can be, my initial reaction was, Patriots should pick him up. Okay, that was what my initial thought was before I even gave it another thought. My first gut instinct was, Patriots should pick him up. Now, you know that I've shared my displeasure for Lawrence Maroney on this program. Lawrence has to be given credit for what he's done over largely the last few weeks. His game on Sunday was very solid, 20 carries, 82 yards, that he did a good job. No complaints with what Lawrence Maroney did. I still don't believe he's the Patriots back for the long haul. Larry Johnson makes sense from a couple of perspectives. Number one, he's a big, rugged, Corey Dillon type of back that Bill Belichick has liked in his offense since the day he has been here. When the Patriots have had championship teams, they've had those types of backs in their offense. Okay, that's number one. Number two, they've got a history with guys like LJ. Read into that Dillon, read into that Randy Moss, whatever you like. They could certainly give him a, you know, short piece of rope with which to coexist on. And, you know, hey, one strike and you're gone, pal, you know, if you screw up here. And I think because he's basically going to be playing for another contract based on what I've been able to read, that here's a guy that's going to be imminently motivated to play. I don't think he was terribly motivated to play for a crappy team in Kansas City, and I think that was pretty obvious. And he just let, you know, everything else get in the way. And still no excuse for his, shall we say, unpolitically correct stance that he took in front of the media a couple of weeks ago. I mean, there's no place for that in society today, and he was basically ridden out of town on a railroad, and deservedly so. Now, does everybody deserve a second chance? Well, sure. But second chances don't just keep coming. This is his one chance, okay? If he blows it here or wherever his next stop is, he's not getting another job in the NFL for some time. Same goes with Michael Vick and the like. You know, interesting that, you know, we saw earlier this week that where Michael Vick was potentially rumored to be maybe on his way to Buffalo at some point after he's done with Philadelphia. Great, bring him on. We get to see him twice a year. I get my quarterback. I don't think he'd be around for Michael Vick. Do you think he would be?
Maybe.
I don't know. T.O.'s been strangely quiet about all this. Who knows? Maybe he'd stick around if Vick were to come to Buffalo. Certainly would add a lot of spice to the AFC East, you have to admit. So I'm like, okay, great, bring it on. Anything that spices up our life around here, I'm okay with. That's number one. But Larry Johnson is going to be playing for a deal for next year, and next year still, to as of today, is going to be an uncapped year. And if it's going to be that, here's a guy that is sufficiently motivated on several fronts. Number one, to prove that he still has gas left in the tank. Number two, to rehab his reputation. Number three, to play for a big-time deal. One more big-time deal before his contract is finally over. And if he shows that he still has gas in the tank in a potentially uncapped year, he could get that deal, whether it's with New England or not. But New England could be his proving ground. Now, the key, of course, is he's got to pass waivers. Don't know if any of the cruddy teams right now would want to pick him up. Washington, I know, has been rumored to be a team that's below 500 to have a crack at Larry Johnson that would want him. But if he passes all the way through waivers and no one picks him up, Patriots would be foolish, I think, not to pick him up, especially when you don't really know if or when Fred Taylor's coming back. We've seen Sammy Morris in the locker room walking around somewhat unencumbered, no knee brace, no limp that's noticeable. But until he gets back out on the practice field, we don't know about Sammy Morris either. This just adds another back to the stable. This just gives you another weapon from which to deal with. Why not? Do you want to win a championship this year? Do you still think that this team has the potential to win a championship this year? If you do, then why would you not want to add another potential 1,000-yard rusher? And I put that figure, 1,000-yard rusher, around quotation marks, because I'll admit, I don't think Larry Johnson has a full tank of gas left in his legs.
Championship.
I don't think he does at all. He's just been beaten up way too much in Kansas City. But does he have enough for, say, 6 to 8 weeks? Probably. And if you motivate him with the thought of possibly winning a ring and playing for a new deal next year in what could be an uncapped year, come on. I think he could find a way to fill his tank relatively quickly, don't you? Webradio at Patriots.com. Yes on Larry Johnson, no on Larry Johnson. It's that simple a question. Now, some of you were talking about that during PFW earlier, but you know, in addition to your nitpicks from Sunday's game, yes or no on LJ and why? Now, Coach Belichick was relatively noncommittal when he was asked earlier today here at the stadium about signing Larry Johnson. However, the deadline for putting in a waiver claim is in an hour and 19 minutes, 4 p.m. Eastern time today. And he did acknowledge that the team plans to discuss the possibility. Yep. I like it. I like it. The team does plan to discuss the possibility of bringing in Johnson before the 4 p.m. Eastern time deadline. So while we have this opportunity, then let's let you hear that and some other items concerning not only Sunday's game, but coming up against the Colts from Patriots head coach Bill Belichick earlier today here at Gillette.
Well, you know, watching the Colts, as usual, they look pretty good. You know, 8-0, and they've won games in different ways. Scoring points, playing defense, turning the ball over, you know, making big plays at the end like they usually do, or getting out in front and kind of coasting along. So, you know, offensively, they look as potent as ever. And even though some new faces in there in the receiving group and defensively, you know, some new faces in the secondary, but Mathis and Freeney, Brock, you know, they still are very, very tough up front. Linebackers run well, and they turn the ball over. They rush the passer well. Very disciplined team on defense in terms of gap control and things like that. So real good football team, well coached, execute extremely well, and they create a lot of problems and a lot of tough matchups. So we know we got to work it out for us on this one Sunday night. But at the same time, we're, you know, looking forward to getting going. And, you know, it seems like we play these guys every year. It's always an important kind of game. And you know, this one's no exception.
Bill, obviously what Peyton does is, and what the offense does is pretty complex. Was it like this when you first saw it? I don't know, whenever you first faced Peyton Manning, or has it, like, dramatically expanded since you first started doing it?
I'm sorry, I couldn't quite hear the question.
Has what they do on offense dramatically expanded during his time in the league, or was it as expansive when he first, you know, became quarterback?
You know, I think they've definitely expanded it over a period of years, but they do a good job of having the things that they need. There might be something that they haven't run in a year or half a season or whatever for the situations that didn't come up, and then they pull it out and when they need it, and they get it against the situation or the look or the coverage that, you know, somebody springs on them. And they know how to pretty much beat everything. And they have their ways of doing it. So whatever defenses you run, that'll trigger concepts that they'll use against them. You might not have the exact formation, or they change their personnel groups around, but they attack you know, whether it's split safety coverage or post safety coverage or pressure or four-man line or three-man line or stunning or two-gapping or, you know, whatever the defensive system is, they have ways they want to attack it, and then when they see it, then that's kind of what they go to. So I wouldn't say they have a lot of, you know, a lot of changes. It's kind of the exact opposite of the Miami offense. They don't motion a lot. They kind of sit in the same formation. They want to see where you're at, and then they'll go to head and go to work and dissect it. So that's sort of the challenge that we have there. But I'd say the things they've expanded their offense with have been things that they felt like there was a need for, or that they found a better way to attack something they had in the past, and they go to it that way.
Bill, curious on your thoughts about the different styles of games that you've had against the Colts, just sort of the pace of games. We've seen some sort of back and forth that seemed like whoever would have the ball last would win, and then we've seen other slowdown type games where it seemed like one third down stopped, and that, you know, that could be the difference in the game. What are your thoughts on that, and what do you expect this time?
Well, you know, we expect a tough game. Like it always is with Indianapolis, scoring wise and all, you know, who knows? And anytime you put turnovers into a game, that could, you know, change the scoring and the pace of the game dramatically. So I think in terms of preparation, you know, what we want to do is prepare for the basic, you know, parts of the game, the things we know we're going to have, first, second, third down situations, red area, and then kicking situations and all that. And then, you know, be ready for some specific things, like 2 minute and, you know, goal line, end of the half, backed up kind of plays, you know, very specific situational things, and make sure that we're ready on those too, because, as you know, those games are some of our games with the Colts that come down to that, whether it be a, you know, goal line play on the 1 yard line, or, you know, a 2 minute play or a field goal, last second field goal, or a, you know, Hail Mary type of situation, things like that. So, you know, we're not going to try to predict the way the game's going to go. We just want to be ready, to play through the situations, know how we want to, handle the things that they do, and also how we want to try to attack them, make sure that we're all on the same page, so that we can, you know, go out there and be aggressive in a real hostile environment. And that's really what we're trying to get set up here today and tomorrow.
Given what their offense can do, I'm sure this is sort of the case every week, but a little more important this week to have your offense stay on the field with some ball control stuff. I need some of that against some power stuff against the Dolphins too.
Well, I think the most important thing is to score points. And, I think you're a lot better off being on the field a shorter amount of time and scoring a touchdown than being out there a longer amount of time and kicking a field goal or giving them back the ball, putting it down to their own 10-yard line or whatever, but not coming out of there with any points. I think when you play the Colts, you got to feel like you need to score to win. And field position, although it's important, that can be erased in a hurry. With an explosive offense like the Colts have, they can get 20, 30, 40 yards in a hurry and negate that field position. So, like I said, it's important, but the most important thing is scoring points and not giving them up. And really last year's game, showed that. It really came down to red area efficiency and they were a little better than we were in that area. The year before, you know, came at us some turnovers, and we had a little edge there. So turnovers, red area, third down, just in general taking advantage of the scoring opportunities and not giving up easy ones and making sure that you make them work for it. I think those are some of the main keys in this game.
In what ways have you seen Jim Caldwell put his imprint on this team?
Well, defensively, they're a little bit different than they were last year schematically. I'm not sure exactly, how much of that is Caldwell, how much of it's Larry Hoyer. But in any case, you know, I think they've got a lot of, they've got a number of young players, you know, new players on the roster. And so obviously Jim's done a great job of getting all that to come together in a very productive way. They don't make many mistakes. They don't beat themselves. They don't give up a lot of long plays. They don't turn the ball over. They don't have a lot of dumb penalties. So they play very, very sound, very fun, good fundamental football, and they make you go out there and beat them. And so far, nobody's been able to do that.
Bill, there's been, I know you talked about this a little bit last night on the radio too, but some talk about Larry Johnson being released. Would you guys, or will you guys, put in a claim for him, and are you interested if he passes through?
We would discuss that organizationally here this afternoon and decide what, if anything, we want to do. To be honest with you, right now, we've just been concentrating on Indianapolis, and, you know, our pro people are doing that. We kind of do that every week at this time. Our pro people go through the guys that are available over the weekend, whether it be waivers or, you know, teams that have had injuries or, you know, changes in a guy's player's physical status or guys that we've worked out or other teams have worked out or whatever it is. And then that all, after all that, it's not just about one guy, but after all that gets done, then we kind of talk about the whole, you know, group and what our plans are for the week and, you know, whether it's to work a guy out or claim a guy or talk to the player or his representatives or whatever it happens to be. So, you know, that's something that we'll do between now and 4 o'clock.
Bill, question on substitutions. Am I right in the understanding that if the offense substitutes, the defense has the right to match that substitution?
Unless it's in the 2 minutes.
Under 2 minutes to play?
Yes.
Okay. And in terms of that,
there's no matching under 2 minutes. If any substitutions after the 2 minute warning, you're on your own.
So, but I'm before the 2 minute warnings, what is the expectation for a coach? If you're on defense now, what is the expectation from how that's managed by the officials in terms of? Being able to not just get your guys on the field, but get them in position. Because that seems like it's been something that has come up in the past, I think, on both sides when these teams have met.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Well, it's, you know, as you know, Mike, it's an offensive league, and most of the rules are put into, you know, help the offense and scoring and all that. And the substitution rules, you know, obviously wasn't a lot of consideration given to defensive coaches or defensive play calling. So, you know, the issue is whether, in the official's mind, whether you get the proper number of players on the field. And from a coaching standpoint, it's not just getting the proper number of players on the field, but it's getting them to, as you said, get lined up in whatever you're playing and everybody knows and understands what that is. So, you know, whether an official can figure that out or not, you know, is arguable, but I don't think they really care about that. As long as they got 11 out there and you got 11, I think they're okay with it. But defensively, it's a problem because even if you get the right guys out there, if everybody doesn't know what to do, in a substituted situation, then you're a little bit of a disadvantage. So you got to find a way to work through that. And I don't think you can count on the officials to really fully give you an opportunity to match up. They just don't do it.
Bill, I think Scott said last.
You know, you got to handle the situation yourself.
All right.
Bill, I have a question about the third quarterback role. Because you only have two, I wanted to ask if you'd ever given any thought to designating somebody else as your third quarterback on game day, like the Buffalo Bills have been doing with Roscoe Parrish.
We thought about that. I mean, that's, you know, that's a possibility. That's something that if it was the right situation, we thought it could be advantageous and within the rules, which there are a lot of third quarterback rules and situations that encompass all that that you have to look at, but sure, we would consider that, absolutely.
maybe there's a wrinkle in the rule, and please educate me if there is, but would there be a disadvantage to not just having an extra guy out there in uniform that you might be able to use in an emergency situation? He doesn't, if you get to the fourth quarter, he doesn't have to go into the game as the quarterback, does he?
Well, the whole point of the rule, though, is, you know, really to be able to utilize that player if something happens to your first two guys. And so, you know, I think if you didn't really have any intention of using that guy as a third quarterback, if Rich Orenberger was your third quarterback, then I don't really know what advantage that would, be for you. So, I understand the question. I'm not trying to be evasive. I'm saying, yeah, that's something that we have talked about, and, you know, there's some very specific rules and situations that come into play. And, you know, if we feel like that's a beneficial thing to do, then we consider it. Absolutely.
In preparing for games like this against a guy like Peyton Manning, you've done it 10 times already now, but is there do you notice a different type of visceral reaction to these games as you prepare for them, whether it be any extra excitement or nausea?
Well, it's hard to prepare for games every week in this league. Every team we play has talented players, you know, great players, good coaches, good system, things that are legitimate threats to what you're trying to do, or what we're trying to do on our side of the ball. So, you know, each week there's a lot of problems we have to face, and of course this week's no different. So, I mean, look, the Colts are a great team. They're 8-0, and I think we all know how competitive they've been, you know, through the last decade. And I'm not trying to minimize their performance or the challenges that they present in any way. I'm just saying that those challenges exist on a weekly basis, and each one's different, each one's unique, and, you know, we have to prepare for each one differently. And every team we play is, you know, capable of beating us, and every team we play, we think we're capable of beating. So that's kind of the way we approach it every week. I'm not saying this isn't a good matchup, and you know, there's nobody we have more respect for than the Colts and what they've done through the years and how they've played against us. But the challenges are there every week.
Well, thanks, everyone. Thank you, Coach.
All right, thank you.
All right, Bill Belichick from Gillette Stadium earlier today in his Tuesday conference call with members of the Patriots media and others involved here. By the way, Jason just did look this up. We played at Indy this year, last year, and in 2007. And then we were home with Indy three straight years in 04, 05, 06, at Indy in 03. So it was at Indy, then three at home, now three on the road. So it's still, we played at Indianapolis four of the last 7 years, basically, is what it boils down to. Four of the last seven. So the next time we face the Colts, which if you win the division, and the Colts win the division, will mean next year, conceivably, we'll have a game with the Colts here at Gillette next year. Conceivably.
In theory.
Until Bill Polian steps in and says that. Why can't the man say Patriots?
I'd like to meet him when I'm in Indy this weekend.
Well, my last impression of Bill Polian had to do with when Doug Flutie was telling this team, and it was during the playoff game. And I happened to be walking through the press box, and I heard this story before the game that during the game when he was out there on the field, he kept pounding on the desk. Did you hear this story? He was pounding on the desk and pounding, you know, and obviously the press box is a, you know, no cheering section, right? But he was definitely cheering and basically yelling at his team to break that midget's leg. I believe that very quote was actually used. And so whatever respect,
so ridiculous,
whatever, you know, I had for Bill Polian at the time after I heard that story. And again, I didn't hear that myself. That came secondhand, but it also came from a very good source. The guys in this room, I think two or three of the guys on PFW actually saw it happen. Nevertheless, it's just probably part of being the rivalry now. I mean, the Colts and the Patriots are, to the 2000s, to the aught decade, if not right there, very close to being what the Cowboys and the Redskins were, I think, in the 1970s. It may be what the Cowboys and the 49ers were in the 1980s. Sure. I would definitely put the Colts and the Patriots and the rivalry that these two franchises now have at least close, not maybe quite there, because I'm not so sure the emotion is still there because you don't play them twice a year. The Cowboys and Redskins used to play twice a year, you know, and obviously they still do, but, you know, when you're in a divisional opponent. Now, if the Colts were still in the AFC East, which they were prior to the realignment of the divisions earlier this decade, and the Colts were still as good as they are now, I think we'd have that. I think we would have that rivalry that, you know, would certainly rival few others in the history of the National Football League. But now that the Colts have been shipped off to their own division, you only play them once a year rather than twice. Still a pretty good rivalry overall. You'd have to say it's a pretty good rivalry. And I think most everybody circles this date on the calendar as being one that they've just got to watch, that they just can't afford to miss. And I think most everybody feels like that for this Sunday. So it's good to talk about that. All right. So now you also heard a little bit from Coach Belichick concerning what he thinks about the possibility of picking up a guy like Larry Johnson. We got 1 hour to go, kids. Actually, 59 minutes and counting until the waiver deadline is up. Patriots could be talking about it right now as we speak. So my simple question to you is, yes or no on picking up Larry Johnson if he's available, and why? Webradio@patriots.com. That's the email address, 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number. Plus your nitpicks from Sunday's game. What, nobody has any problems at all with what they saw on the field on Sunday? What are we watching? And what are we watching through? Patriot-colored glasses? Come on, I expected more out of you. We tear things apart here regularly, weekly, every day here on the program. Yet nobody has any complaints at all with what happened on Sunday. You got to be kidding me.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program.
Ron Jaworski,
Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook.
Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Man, it's football season. I mean, usually the house is decked out by now. You know, and the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got Razor Sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game. I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
So, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday, to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday, to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop. Dine. Enjoy.
Hour number two inside Patriots Playbook for a Tuesday here on American Airlines Patriots.com radio. My name is John Rook. Web radio at Patriots.com is the email address. 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number. I have to admit, you know you're getting old when you start seeing your own people that you worked with and you covered for years now talking about the effects of aging, and most directly I'm speaking to the story that you may have seen on various wire services today reporting that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is being treated for a form of leukemia. You know, first of all, Abdul-Jabbar is in his 60s, which is, I find, just incredibly shocking, as it seems like it was just yesterday that he was still playing for the Lakers, and yet it's been 20 years ago this season that he retired from the NBA. 20 years! Well, thoughts and prayers out to Kareem, who actually, you know, for a guy who, quite frankly, was not the easiest person to deal with when I was in the NBA some 25 years ago. And a lot of that was because, you know, hey, I mean, he's an easy target.
What position did you play?
Announcer. Announcer boy. That was me. But when I was traveling in the league, it wasn't always easy to deal with, but he never, ever once stiffed me for an interview. Whenever I had to, you know, ask him a couple of questions, he would always at least answer them. Sometimes he wasn't the most talkative person, but he knew that there was someone there to do their job. He didn't just dish you outright like so many, you know, superstars in the game do. So my thoughts are with him, definitely. You know, time marches on for all of us, right? All right, web radio at patriots.com. That's the way that you get us here. Two questions on the table today. Number one, if Larry Johnson is made available via waivers, if the Patriots can pick him up off the waiver wire, would you if you could? Yes or no, and why? And number two, what's your nitpick for Sunday's game against the Miami Dolphins? Let's go to Jim in Florida first. Jim says, John, first, I absolutely agree with you that the Indy game and the Jets game are crucial games for the Pats to assure a tiebreaker advantage in looking toward the playoffs. Just look at the 08 season. At 11-5 last year, the Pats matched Miami's and Indy's one-loss record but missed the playoffs altogether. That's what I'm saying here, people. I said that right off the top of the show in case you missed it today. This week and next week, when the Patriots are playing the Colts and then the Jets at home, these are the two most important games this season. Of the remaining eight games, these are two you need to win, especially if you have any hopes of getting one of the top two seeds in the AFC and getting an opening round bye in the playoffs. You've got to win both of these games. You could go 1-1. You're still probably going to win the division. You're not going to get a bye. You're going to be playing on wild card weekend. It's that simple. Got to win these two games. Two biggest games of the year, this week and next. So there's no reason for anybody here, whether it's down the hallway or in here in the studio or you listening at home on your computer or at work on your computer or wherever you're streaming us at, there's no reason for anybody to be complacent, okay? This is time now to get serious about football and to get serious about this team and whether or not they've got a chance of actually doing something this season. We're going to find it out over the next 2 weeks.
No complacency. Get out the keyboard and let's go. I don't think this team wants to find itself, Jim says, looking in an outside looking in position again in 09. So the Indy and Jets games are huge for the Pats. That said, my nitpick this week is the red zone production. It cost us the Jets game and Denver game. Made the Miami game closer than it should have been. And will cost us down the road if we don't get better at cashing in the red zone. Bullseye, Jim. Bullseye. Spot on. That's exactly how I feel. It's already cost you two games. Darn near cost you a third one this past Sunday. It's great that Steve Gostkowski was 4 for 4. Okay, that's fine. He should have been 2 for 2. This team should have had 35 points up on the board or more. 38. And then we wouldn't be having any problems at all with what happened defensively. But the offense inability to score touchdowns in the red zone is causing us to almost sort of, you know, micro-analyze the play of the defense. Largely, the defense has been very, very solid, if not just flat-out good this year. But I nitpick on the defense this week because the offense somehow is not turning opportunities into the points that it should. The offense should be further along than the defense. But now if we're going to have to rely on the defense to pick us up, the defense has got to be better. It's got to be ready in that eventuality. Jim also says nitpick 1B would be the poor defense to start the second half. Jets game again last week against Miami. It had Randy Moss not broken off the long one for a touchdown on the drive after the subsequent quick kickoff. We could very well be looking at 5-3. I'm telling you, that's it exactly. That 10-minute drive that Miami had to take the opening kickoff and march it right down the field and take the lead was disgusting. It's disgusting. Championship caliber defense can't give up a 10-minute drive under any circumstances. Jim says if the opponent defers, we can't let them take the second half kickoff. Establish their dominance, march down the field, and score 7. Not if we expect to be playing for all the marbles at the end. Jim, I couldn't agree with you more. I really could not agree with you more. We're on the same wavelength here, pal. Patriots won the toss, or at least I believe they won the toss on Sunday and then elected to take the ball. I didn't mind that philosophy because I really want, you know, I thought this team should get the jump on a team like Miami. But now you can begin to understand why the Patriots defer if they win a toss. You can really do some damage if you can score late in the half and then get the opening second half kickoff. I think that's more of a weapon than people really realize. And maybe, if you thought about it, you realized it this past Sunday. Jim says, prediction, though, Pats 27, Indy 24, and another Pats Indy nail-biter. All right, Jim, thanks for the email. Good stuff. Let's go to James, a different Jim. James says, I would definitely think LJ, Larry Johnson, could help as long as the locker room thinks they can keep him in check. Him and Fred Taylor would be awesome. Well, if you had Fred Taylor healthy, I would agree with you. That'd be a heck of a 1-2 punch. But the reason that they're going to bring or would even have any discussions potentially to bring Larry Johnson in is because Fred Taylor is not going to be available for another month, perhaps. Otherwise, you don't even think about bringing a guy like Johnson in. I just think it's a no-brainer. I think you have to look at it. You just have to take a serious look at it. And can he help your team? Yes. Can you be convinced that he's got enough gas left in his tank in order to be effective? I don't know. I mean, maybe they bring him in for work. I don't know. I mean, based on what we've seen, he had no motivation to play behind, you know, a fairly crappy offensive line in Kansas City. Ask Matt Castle what he thinks about the Kansas City offensive line. There's some work to do there. I just think that as long as you're not out heavy bucks here, you got a guy that's motivated. You got a guy that's motivated to play for money, to rehab his so-called reputation and potentially play for a championship.
We have a listener correction.
Okay.
Miami won the toss and deferred.
Did they? Thank you.
The official said it wrong and then said it again.
Is that what it was? Okay, because
yes.
I thought I saw him say, heard New England won the toss.
He said that and then turned his mic off, Miami turned it back on, and okay. corrected himself.
Okay, well, then that part I had missed then. Well, then I think that tells you then why teams, it just underscores even more, why teams now, when they win the toss, they elect to defer. Because that can be a tremendous weapon for you. Stripper says his nitpick is the offense, not enough touchdowns. You know, Strippers, you and I agree on that one. While I've nitpicked on the defense, certainly you can nitpick
on
the offense.
Down.
Yeah, I know. That may be one of the few times Strippers and I have ever agreed on anything. By the way, Strippers, what's Oklahoma's record right now? Sorry, I couldn't resist. Just couldn't resist. Hey, you'd be doing the same thing to me if Texas were having the same troubles, okay? That's all I can tell you. In fact, you'd be worse about it. That's the problem with you. But that's all right. Just all a good-natured fun here. Down year for Boomer and Sooner. Mike in Erie says, have any other two non-divisional teams played each other as many times as the Patriots have played the Colts? That's a good question. Probably not. The reason that they've played as many times as they have is because, obviously, prior to 03, they were still a divisional opponent. So they automatically played twice a year. But since that point in time, they've played Indianapolis every year. Why? Because the way that the schedule formula works out in the NFL, if you win your division, you're going to play the first-place teams in the other divisions. If you finish second in your division, you're going to play the second-place teams, and so forth and so on. And then you rotate divisions from the other conference. Every 4 years, you're going to play one of the other divisions from the NFC and from the AFC. So I would have to say probably not, Mike. That's the main reason, though, that the Patriots have played the Colts so much. They played every year just because they keep winning their respective divisions. It's just the way it kind of works out. Oh, look at this. Okay, this comes from Boston.com, sports blog, posted by Eric Wilbur. I guess the mind games are underway. It says here, not content in just pumping in fake noise these days, it appears the Indianapolis Colts have turned to a new strategy for throwing the New England Patriots off their game. Mouse poop. Indianapolis station WXIN broke the story leading into its 10 p.m. newscast last night when a worker for Center Place Catering decided to blow the whistle on Lucas Oil Stadium's dirty little secret. This is just the latest citation of wrongdoing at the Colts' home field. The report cites Center Place Catering and Lucas Oil Stadium have been cited for food safety violations dating back to 2008. In 2009, January earlier this year, health investigators found dead rodents hadn't been removed from food service areas. In March, investigators found mice feces by coffee urns. In April, a report showed mice running through a stadium kitchen. In September, there were violations for improperly storing toxic materials and for unsafe food that wasn't being kept cold or hot enough at Lucas Oil. Is this all part of another diabolical master plan by Colts president Bill Polian leading up to Sunday's showdown against the Patriots? Well, of course not. I'd eat at the hotel. Maybe the Patriots should bring along food testers for the locker room or something.
I know where I'm not eating dinner.
not at Lucas Oil Stadium. Oh, man. Oh, that's pretty bad. Yikes. All right. Yep. Well, it started. War of Words has started. How about that? But see, now that was an Indianapolis TV station, though, that broke into their programming to announce that report last night that Lucas Oil Stadium is, shall we say, less than sanitary. Ooh. Goodness gracious, that's kind of nasty. All right, TGNNJ says, easy, John, easy, calm down. The big nitpick is the red zone offense. It stinks. I suppose you think LJ would be able to punch the ball in at the red zone? How's his hands? Can he catch? Not sure he is worth the asking price. Put him next to Junior's locker, I suppose. Of course you would. You definitely surround him with the right people, number one, TG, okay? Number two,
yes, I realize that the biggest nitpick may be the red zone offense, but we've brought that up so many times already. I'm tired of talking about it. It's time now to put some of the weight and some of the burden of being a good team on the defense's shoulders. Hey, they've showed us they can do it, so let's step up to it. Let's be a championship caliber defense. What's wrong with that, TG? I don't think it's too much to expect them to be able to play like that. And come on, you got to admit, 10-minute drive? 10-minute drive, and you can't make one play? One play somewhere? That's a joke. I guarantee you. I mean, I don't know if you saw it or not, pal. We saw it. I don't know if it was one of our stadium cameras or if it was one of the network cameras, but it was up on the ProVision screen here, where after the Patriots scored on that 71-yarder from Brady to Moss, Brady was rather vocal toward the defense on the sideline. In fact, he was very vocal toward the defense on the sideline. He was yelling. Yes, he was yelling. And yes, those were all defensive players, linebackers and down linemen that he was yelling at. Now, who knows what he was saying, but he wasn't smiling when he said it. Perhaps he was just offering them a little bit of encouragement. And I think for the most part, the defense did okay thereafter. Okay? So, there. How's that? Am I taking it easier for you now, TG? James says, we may get better, but right now I think we're getting lucky with our wins. Mostly dropped passes from the other team at the last few seconds, not caused by our defense, but by concentration errors from the other team. The Saints may eat our lunch if our defense doesn't step it up. Also, a lot of our backs don't tackle. Well, I will admit, I thought that the Patriots secondary did not have a terribly good game on Sunday. Some of that was tackling, yes. Not worried about the Saints, though, James, okay? Not worried about them at all right now. Let's get through these next couple of weeks first before we worry about the Saints. Since the 2006 Super Bowl, I think most teams realize that if you rush Brady a lot, he'll get frustrated and beat himself up. I believe he's the one that is hurting the offense the most, not Maroney or lack of receivers beyond Moss and Welker. Interesting. Well, that's possible. That's possible. And a lot of that probably still has to do with every once in a while he's still shaking off a little bit of rust. Interesting. All right. Let's see what else we have here. Mike. He says, why is the Bon Jovi touchdown song such a secret? Oh, well, I can answer that fairly succinctly because they haven't released it yet, I don't think. And I think they're waiting for the record producer or the album to primarily release the song. So that's why nobody wants to say anything about it, because it's up to Bon Jovi's record label to release the song officially. So I don't know what to tell you about that. That's why nobody around here will say anything about it, because John Bon Jovi, being friends with Bill Belichick, has said, here, why don't you play this? Why don't you do this? Belichick wanted to do that. It's for his friend to kind of promote, you know, the album and the song itself, and that's basically where it is. It's up to the record label to do that. And then he also says, all right, John, what was the deal with the play clock? All right, what are we specifically referring to? Play clock or game clock? What are we referring to? Referring to the 1 second before halftime? Or after the play was concerned, after the last play, the Patriots had 1 second left on the clock to kick a field goal before halftime? If that's what we're referring to, I sit right next to the guy who operates the clock. And, in fact, as soon as the play was over, I looked over at him, and at the clock it said one tick. And I said, hey, great job. I just looked at him and he goes, hey, just doing my job. That's all there was to it. That was it. Now, I understand why the Dolphins might have been upset, but, you know, I have no reason to think that, you know, any sort of chicanery would be going on in that particular instance. Man who's been running the play clock and the game clock at Gillette Stadium, or shall I say in Foxborough, has been doing it for over 20 years, I believe, now. So if he's been doing it for that long, obviously he's been doing it right for a long, long time. And in fact, he's not even hired by the Patriots. Little known secret here, little known fact, is that the people who run the clocks are actually hired by the NFL. When you have a home playoff game, you make the playoffs and you have a home game in the NFL is so worried about a potential home field advantage that they actually bring in outside people to run the clocks, to run the game clock and to run the play clock. So, in other words, the two people who run the clocks, one's a play clock, one's a game clock, the two people that run the clocks throughout the entire season here, hired by the NFL to begin with, not by the Patriots, hired by the NFL, are switched out for the playoff game, and they're sent off someplace while a team close by comes in. For instance, 2 years ago when the Patriots last played a playoff game at home, we had the Philadelphia Eagles clock crew come in while our two people, the gentleman to which I think you're referring to, Mike, our two people went off, and I think they went to the Meadowlands for a game, if I'm not mistaken, for a Giants game. So that's the NFL, believe me, takes great pains to making sure there are no improprieties or no illusions of improprieties anywhere. Think you can trust them. I don't think you'll get any Dolphins fans to say you trust them, but I think you can probably trust them. My thought anyway on that. Now, I'm assuming, Mike, that's what you're talking about in terms of the clock. As far as nitpicking is concerned, he says, getting my emails read on PFW. The only way I get my emails read is by sending them to Christina on Shop Talk. Maybe no one else is listening to that show. Well, I read your emails, Mike. I don't know what the problem is. I mean, I realize, you know, PFW may not, but I can't speak for Fred and the other guys. Sorry. Maybe they don't like you. Did you do anything to tick them off? Have you bought them lunch? There's that I think would be the best way I know to get your email read. Buy the guys lunch. While you're at it, buy us lunch here too. Says, while we're nitpicking, is it me or is one of the reasons the red zone production is down is the Brady DeMoss fade to the back of the end zone just isn't there? Back in 07, that seemed to be a classic Patriot touchdown. Yeah, that's part of it. They've tried to go to that a couple of times, and I think teams know it's coming, so they're defensing for it. And I do believe, you know, the Patriots have not been successful on that because other teams expect it to come. I think if you find that, you know, if there's one-on-one coverage, that you might still see the Patriots try to throw that from time to time. But I think they're trying to get teams to sort of outguess them. If for no other reason than just to try to kind of throw them a curveball where that's concerned, you know. I think that's part of the reason why. And number two, you know, the few times they've thrown it, it hasn't worked successfully. So I don't know that they want to take that risk anymore. Teams are just expecting it. Let's face it. You throw it up, let Randy go get it, and, you know, it's a tough play to defend. So when teams learn how to defend that and stop it, and they put bring over some help coverage on that, bring the safety over, whatever they're going to do to try to stop that, you know, you're going to try to go in another direction, and you're going to try to, you know, hopefully take advantage of weak spot in the defense where that safety isn't going to be. We've seen that actually happen a couple of times with a guy like Benjamin Watson be open in the back of the end zone, and he's come through with a couple of catches in that particular instance. So, hey, choose your poison, right? That's basically what it boils down to, is just choose your poison, choose your opportunity, and then hopefully it'll work out. A couple of other things very quickly here. Henry in Whitefish, Montana. Is that right? Yes, Whitefish, Montana. Says, the Dolphins are a painful team to watch as an opponent. You get the feeling every time they have the ball that they could turn any ridiculous-looking option play into a 50-yard gain. And when they do, you never feel like they did something great. It's more like your team just forgot how to tackle. Ronnie Brown has a way of making defenders look like school children. When he gets 20 yards and nine guys try to tackle him on the way, you just want to puke right into your couch. If I was a Fins fan, I would love that guy, but I'm not, so I don't. Camarillo is money, too. He looks a lot like Welker when he played for Miami. Talented, quick, great hands, totally underutilized. Why they throw so many balls at Devon, I'm not the best at catching. Or, Ted, I just dropped it again, Jr. I don't understand. I like those nicknames. I think the Wildcat may work at times, but it may end up killing Chad Henne's career in Miami. I don't think a quarterback can get into a rhythm playing a third of the downs as a wide receiver or on the sidelines. About the time he got tackled for a 12-yard loss on that reverse pitch, he looked like he was ready to slit his wrists. I think they have some good ideas, but I prefer the Pats approach, where a good old-fashioned Hall of Fame quarterback drops back and hits a Hall of Fame wide receiver for a 70-yard pass. All right, Henry, very good. Excellent analogy, good analysis there as well. Totally agree with you about Miami. Painful team to watch. You do get the feeling that they can go 50 yards in a moment's notice. I just don't have any receivers. Now, that game, quite frankly, would have been a lot closer than 27-17 if Devon Bess and or Ted Ginn, but mostly Bess, had been able to hold on to a football or two. I hope you realize that, right? If Miami ever finds a way to actually bring in some wide receivers into that offense, look out. This division's only going to get tougher from here on out, especially if Buffalo decides to bring in a guy like Vic. Certainly make things interesting around here. Webradio at Patriots.com. That's how you reach us here in the program. Two questions of the day. Number one, your nitpick for Sunday with or for or against the Patriots, against the Dolphins. And number two, Larry Johnson, yes or no? Do you bring him in if you can? Why or why not? Webradio at Patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. We continue inside the playbook.
Hey! Don't go yet, sir.
But the light turned green.
Well, you don't go till I say so. You play by my rules. My rules. Ball start, loss of 5 yards, still first down.
What are you talking about?
Unsportsmanlike conduct, 10 yards.
Unsportsmanlike is 15 yards.
Move the chains!
You are a crossing guard.
Personal foul, 15 yards.
And stop blowing that whistle.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Delay of game,
but,
5 yards,
but
first down.
But you're not...
Keep the change, patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services N.A., Bank of America N.A., member FDIC, copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
The Patriots are celebrating their 50th anniversary, and you can too at the Patriots Pro Shop. The Patriots Pro Shop is the place to find all the official 50th season merchandise. Everything from the 1963 jerseys the players are wearing this season to polos, sweatshirts, and hats featuring the original Pat Patriot logo. The Patriots Pro Shop has the widest selection of Patriots merchandise, including many 50th season items that you won't find anywhere else. Located next to Gillette Stadium at Patriot Place, the Patriots Pro Shop is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. or 24 hours a day at PatriotsProShop.com. And if you order from PatriotsProShop.com, we'll ship your order for just $5. You'll know it's authentic when you order from PatriotsProShop.com because your item is being shipped from Gillette Stadium. Celebrate 50 years of Patriots football at the Patriots Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in? It
says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Inside the Playbook for a Tuesday. John Rook with you here on Patriots.com. And let's see if we can get everything unfrozen here and we can read a couple more emails. Back to the emails. Our friend Howard in Orange, Connecticut. He says, LJ, I have read he is a head case and could come with baggage. That said, if Coach B thinks he will make the team better, I have to defer to him considering his history with Moss, Dillon, and Brian Cox. Yeah, remember him, Patriots fans? Remember Brian Cox? Yeah, absolutely. He was one of those guys that certainly kind of fell into that somewhat troublesome category and counted of himself, I think, very well by winning a Super Bowl here, no doubt. The guy has been a beast for Kansas City, just don't know that he has his head screwed on correctly. Now, as far as the nitpicks, Howard says, number one, pass rush was non-existent. Yeah. Number two, secondary needs to be more aggressive in coverage. Number three, Dean Pease needs to be more aggressive in getting to the quarterback. I absolutely agree with that. The bend but don't break D, a Belichick staple, is driving me insane. I understand they don't want to give up the big play, but it is frustrating to watch. That said, they must be doing something right. They are the number two scoring defense in the league, with number one being the Colts. It's funny how everybody seems to think initially that this is going to be an offensive shootout on Sunday at the mice-infested Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis, and yet these two teams have the number one and number two scoring defenses in the league right now through 8 weeks. Kind of funky, huh? And he says, number four, the red zone offense needs to start putting the ball in the end zone and stop settling for field goals. Absolutely dead straight on, Howard. That's exactly what I've been saying. Could not agree more. It's got to figure out a way to put the ball in the end zone. Field goals are absolutely going to just, it's going to, one of these Sundays, in a game in particular, Patriots are going to settle for a field goal and they need to have a touchdown. They're going to lose a game by what, 3 or 4 points? Where that one touchdown is going to make all the difference in the world between a win or a loss. Could happen this week against the Colts. I mean, in theory, it's going to be an evenly matched game. Colts will probably be a slight favorite, I would tend to think. I'd be surprised if they weren't. Patriots have an opportunity to score, and they're going to stall in the red zone. They have to kick a field goal and say they lose the game 24-21. Well, you know, or 27-24. If they score a touchdown rather than kick a field goal, it's 28-27. So, I mean, you have to be able to take advantage of the opportunity when it presents itself. And they haven't done that on offense enough. Hasn't hurt them a lot yet. It's hurt them enough, I think, with Denver, certainly. That's the game that the Patriots should have won. In watching Denver last night, you kind of see where they're coming back down to earth now as I think teams are beginning to catch up with what the Broncos are accomplishing. And now I think Josh McDaniels will be put on notice here to see if he can't draw up something new because teams are starting to figure them out. The Steelers looked good last night, folks. They looked good last night. It's hard for me to believe the Steelers are 6-2. How the heck did they lose two games? I thought they were pretty complete last night overall. Steelers are very much beginning to play now like a defending champion team should. So when we get into all the hype, as well we should this week, and we're going to get all buried and just, you know, totally immersed in Patriots-Colts this week, keep in mind that there's another team that deserves to be in this mix with the Colts and the Patriots, and it is the defending champion Steelers. There are three teams at the top of the heap in the AFC. And I wouldn't completely dismiss San Diego. They're only a game back of Denver now in the AFC West. And everybody was saying, oh, you know, Denver was gonna end up walking away, running away with that division. Nah, way too much football to be played. We're just at the halfway point, and they're only a game out of the division lead. Way too much time left. San Diego could still be a factor. Nathan, do we have to play that now? Should we save that for later? Yeah, let's save that for later. Nathan says, John, I appreciate that you challenge us fans with different questions. Thank you, Nathan. I try. Hey, I'm only asking the questions that I ask myself.
What? Voices in your head, huh?
Voices in my head, yes. That's exactly right. Voices in my head tell me to say this. He says, I appreciate you challenge us with different questions. One question you recently asked was whether or not we would buy Patriot stock. You said that you would sell. Yes, I did say that. However, what would it take for you to change your mind? Would we have to win either the Colts, Saints, or both games for you to purchase more Patriot stock? I think that we will win one of those games, but probably not both. What do you think? Break down our matchup with both undefeated teams and tell us if you think we could beat either one of them or both. Oh, Nathan, put me on the mark.
It's a curveball.
It is. Let's see if I can swing and keep from missing.
This could be a bit.
Could be. Could be. All right. I like that, Nathan. Very good. He's challenging me back. That's excellent. Okay. About time. I like it. All right. Let's see if we can get to your points. What would it take for me to change my mind? Well, it would start with a win this weekend. That would certainly go a long way. But I think it really has to do with style points because you can see, at least in my estimation, you can tell over time if a team is a legitimate championship contender. Do they make plays? And by that, do I mean, you know, when they need a big play, does somebody usually step up and make one? Now, they've had enough of them made so far this year where it hasn't really hurt them a lot. But that third quarter drive against the Dolphins, when they allowed the Dolphins to go 10 minutes, that just killed me. There were no playmakers making plays then. And you got to have that. Offensively, this team has, well, they have Tom Brady and Randy Moss. They have Wes Welker. All of them playmakers. Benjamin Watson even, playmaker. I'd like to see another wideout. I'd like to see a third option. I'd like to see a running back become a playmaker. Maybe Larry Johnson could be that person. And again, we've got, what, 19 minutes to go before the waiver deadline here. Still no word yet, but perhaps they could use another one. They could use a couple on defense. I think that Brandon Merriweather has the potential to be that playmaker on defense. We've seen that in spots this year. I think Brandon McGowan has the potential to be a playmaker on defense. Adalys Thomas, the reason that we've all been down on him is because he hasn't been the kind of playmaker that we thought he could or even should be on defense. Those are all guys that need to come to the fore. Now, if we see them start to make a play here and there where it stops a drive, you know, with a pick or a big tackle, something along those lines, or a big sack, I'll change my mind. I could definitely see myself becoming a purchaser rather than a seller of Patriots stock. I don't think they have to win both games for me to be a buyer. If the Patriots win this week, I think I would probably have a tendency to buy Patriots stock. I don't think they necessarily have to win the New Orleans game, although just why? Maybe this is the voices in my head. I'm not sure. I just seem to think they might have a better chance to win the New Orleans game than they do against the Colts. And maybe that's just because if New Orleans is still undefeated when they play on Monday night in a couple of weeks, think about the hype that'll be going on around the game in New Orleans. That'll be like the mini Super Bowl. Patriots have been there, done that. The Saints haven't. I have a tendency to believe that New Orleans might be a little tight, might be a little bit too sky high for that game, and I think the Patriots can probably take advantage of that. Why? Because there's still enough veteran leadership in this locker room. So I don't think they have to win the New Orleans game. Winning the Colts game, a game that means more, if they can beat the Colts this weekend, I'm buying. Let's put it this way, all right? In pure stock market terms, okay? If they win this weekend, I'm holding. But then they beat the Jets and make it back-to-back, I'm buying. Because then they would have put an absolute stranglehold in the division. They will be within one game of the best record overall in the AFC, at the very least. And they will be in prime position, if they take care of business, to potentially have one of the two buys in the AFC. And I think then, at that point, you're in position to say, okay, I'm buying stock. All right, Nathan, I hope that kind of answers your question. I know you also asked, break down our matchup with both undefeated teams. you know, the Saints is 2-3 weeks away. It's tough for me to do that other than what I've already just told you. As far as the Colts are concerned, we're going to spend the rest of the week doing that here. And it's pretty easy. Patriots have got to find a way to put some pressure on Manning. And I think the one thing the Patriots have to do this week is figure out a way to take Dallas Clark out of the equation. He's been Superman for them. He absolutely has put on the big red cape with the big red S or the yellow S on the back of that red cape, and he has been Superman in the absence of Anthony Gonzalez and the others there. Marvin Harrison, who's not even with the team anymore. I mean, he's been Peyton's binky, as far as I can tell. I think the Patriots would be okay against Joseph Addai in the running game, but Manning, you give him time to pick you apart, he will kill you. He will surgically slice and dice you, and we've seen that. He has carried this team on his shoulders. I mean, you take Peyton Manning out of the equation, the Colts don't lead that division. Colts may not even be 4-4 without Peyton Manning. Got to find a way to harass Manning. And the one thing that I think that a Bill Belichick coach defense has done, as well as any other defense in the NFL over the last 10 years, is game plan specifically against star players on the opposing team. And the one I think they need to game plan for is Dallas Clark. What do you think, Nathan? How did I do? You buying, you selling?
Brilliant! Brilliant!
Mike says, yeah, John, I know they need lunch, especially when they solicited me to buy it for them. Read this, laugh out loud. He says, great show. Oh, thank you, Mike. Appreciate that. Don't forget me on the lunch thing, okay? If you ever buy the guy's PFW lunch, one thing you need to do is make sure that you include with the email, save some for John. And save some for Rook and save some for Doc, okay? That's all we need.
I eat.
Do you eat? Bastard. Here I am. I'm taking up for you here. I'm taking up for you. And you say, oh, I eat. Thanks. You could tell them to save some for me. No, no. Although the last couple of weeks, they have saved me some cookies.
Just trying to be honest.
Okay. I suppose. TG and Jersey writes back. He says, all right, John, my real nitpick is the pass rush. Seems to be getting better, but still not where it needs to be. Burgess, huh? Tully is a bright spot, and Mike Wright has his moments, but we need to get to the point where opponents are concerned. Going to need it this week against Mr. Clean, except for the mouse poop, of course. Very good, TG. Totally agree with you. That's dead on. Dead on. Burgess, although this last week, I got to admit, Derek Burgess, I actually saw him to be a little bit more active than I've seen him the last couple of weeks. Tully Bant to Kane, well, there's a reason why he's in the lineup and playing as much as he is, because he's producing. He's now a starter at outside linebacker, and I think he deserves the spot. He's not a part-time bit player anymore. I think the Patriots consider him to be the starter on the outside, and he's deserved it because he's made plays. Mike Wright, we've seen, has made plays. I hope they don't make a habit of moving Vince Wilfork off to defensive end as they did this weekend. Although, again, I like the individual matchup with him and Long. It made a lot of sense. But, boy, that 10-minute drive, I'm telling you what, I think it all goes out the window after that. Didn't like that at all. Stripper says, okay, congrats, John. Texas Big 12 champs. Says, after seeing Stoops ruin this year, we can't recover next year. Enjoy the Big 12 title next year, too. Wow. I sense a sense of defeatism, Strippers. It's not like you at all. Suck it up. What do you want me to do? Get out the crying towel for you? That's what happens when you cast your lot with the Oklahoma Sooners. Come on. Suck it up. They'll be back. They always will. They'll be back. See, that's the one thing that, you know, I mean, Oklahoma will always, they'll be back. I'm not worried about Oklahoma at all, and you probably shouldn't either. But I'm loving it this year, that's for certain. One more nitpick from TG. He says, play calling doesn't seem to be as effective as it needs to be. The absence of McDaniel seems more evident. Is it that, or is it a matter of our personnel not being able to run a more colorful offense? What do you think? I think that's legit. I said this somewhere in the vicinity of 3 or 4 weeks ago, that
you know, even though Bill O'Brien has entered into the equation in terms of calling some plays or scheming some plays as the quarterback coach, he is not the de facto offensive coordinator. The bottom line on the play calling is Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick is the de facto offensive coordinator for this team. Now, O'Brien is certainly working with Tom Brady and certainly, you know, schemes plays, and he's the quote-unquote quarterback's coach. But the bottom line falls to the head coach. I personally believe that if he can find somebody, that in the offseason, that would be one way that this Patriots coaching staff could be upgraded. And again, I'm not saying that he's doing a poor job. I'm not saying that he's doing a bad job. I'm saying that a head coach's job is primarily to be a sort of a CEO, an overseer, an executive who makes the right hires and then allows people to do their jobs and doesn't micromanage.
Get the f*** off the field!
That's what good CEOs and head coaches do. That's why I think Eric Mangini is struggling as much as he is. He just...
But I'm not Bill Belichick.
No,
I'm not Bill Parcells.
No, you're not. Neither one. You micromanage too much. At least that's what I hear you doing. You must hire people. You must be an effective CEO. You must hire people that are good at what they do, and you must give them the resources with which to do their jobs.
I want a team-first attitude where players are working for the name on the front of the jersey, not the name on the back of the jersey.
He's absolutely right about that.
Except the fact that jerseys don't have names on the front.
No, they don't. Just numbers. Some college teams have the names on the front, though.
Not in the NFL.
No, they don't.
Idiot!
Actually, wait a second. I think they do. I think in the Patriots logo, in script right across the front of the jersey.
Not every team does that.
No, but the Patriots are.
True.
That's the name on the front of the jersey. That's what he was talking about there, right?
Pretty sure Cleveland doesn't have that. Their uniform is just brown.
Yeah, that's true. Brown or white. Or orange. They are butt ugly uniforms, too, aren't they? Yeah, they're pretty bad.
Speaking of mouse poop.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think the Patriots could upgrade themselves there, TG, if they could find a coordinator that Belichick is comfortable with working with. Maybe a guy like O'Brien gets elevated into that role. Maybe this year is sort of the audition year for that particular role in the Patriots offense.
So as a college guy, college sports guy like you are, so if Notre Dame gets rid of Charlie Weiss, does Charlie Weiss come back to the Patriots?
You know, that's a great question, and somebody actually asked me that yesterday. So would you bring back Weiss? Well, I think it's proven that those two guys have worked together and have worked together very well. Question is, would Charlie be comfortable doing that without up and moving on to the next job that goes along? I think Bill and Charlie would have to have a sit-down, heart-to-heart, find out where Charlie is with his career, and see if that would work again. Because, let's face it, Charlie coming back here would be looked at, he would be deemed a failure. He would be deemed a failure. I'm not saying that he is a failure. I'm saying that I think that would be the general perception. I mean, he's still going to end up winning 8-9 games. That may not be enough for Notre Dame fans, but he's still going to end up winning 8 or 9 games. The Notre Dame job is a job that traditionally will not settle for just 8 or 9 wins. You've got to be contending for a major bowl every year, and if you're not, well, then you get axed. That's what has happened to many coaches over the course of the last decade or two. You know, it happened to Ty Willingham, happened to Bob Davey. It's happened to a bunch of them. So, wouldn't surprise me. I think, you know, somebody tried to tell me the other day, the only way Notre Dame fixes its problems is by joining a conference. And I'm like, no. The way Notre Dame gets better is by recruiting better. You know, the thought was that Charlie Weiss was actually recruiting better players at Notre Dame, and yet they're not able to translate that into wins yet. I would argue that save for probably quarterback and Golden Tate at wide receiver, Jimmy Clausen and Golden Tate, that I don't really see Notre Dame's recruiting appreciably getting better. Have they had many top 20 recruiting classes, one or two, since Charlie's been there? Notre Dame should have a top 10 recruiting class every year.
If they want to be up there with the Texases and the Floridas and the Alabamas and the LSUs and, yes, even the Oklahomas, I'll give you a little, I'm going to give you a little shout-out here, strippers, okay? If you want to be up there with those guys every year, the LSUs, the Auburns, the USCs with Pete Carroll, you must recruit a top 10 to 15 caliber class every year. You cannot take a year off. And I just don't know that he's recruited well enough. Now, it's true that Notre Dame does not have quite the allure to today's college-age player as it did decades ago. Whereas decades ago, you know, the power and the pull of Notre Dame meant something. Today doesn't mean anything other than the fact that, oh, yeah, Notre Dame, they're the team that's always on TV. That should be good enough, I would think, for today's high school football player. And so that's why I say that Notre Dame doesn't necessarily need a conference. As long as they have NBC to televise their games, they're going to get seen. Oh, you had to go find that. And that's what happens when I sit here and I talk about Notre Dame. I did tell my son, though, who's 14 and a freshman in high school, I said, you know what, you could do a lot worse than consider going to Notre Dame. You know, not just the tradition, it's got great academics, but, you know, it's just, it's got good tradition. It's got old school and new school both. It's got a lot of good stuff about it. Ask Charlie Weiss, he'll tell you. If Charlie is okay with, you know, not pursuing a head coaching job, say, in the next 3 to 5 years, and maybe using the Patriots to, quote-unquote, rehab his coaching reputation. Not that it will really need a lot of rehab, because Notre Dame is a very thankless job, let's face it. Very difficult for a guy who's had no previous head coaching experience to go into, like Charlie, and coach and win championships. That's tough. And I think Charlie would actually be a pretty good fit back in New England. He's got a track record here. Brady knows him. Belichick knows him. If he could do it, why not? If he's open, and the job is open, technically.
So would you then bring back Romeo, too, and bring back the trio?
You could. You could. You absolutely could. I, for some reason, think, though, this team would be more inclined to bring back Charlie than it would be Romeo. Don't ask me why. Charlie has arguably had more success as a head coach than Romeo ever had. But I see Romeo as being the more viable candidate for another head coaching job in the near future than maybe Charlie. I don't know why. Maybe that's just because Romeo did his thing in the NFL, didn't have a ton of support in Cleveland. Whereas, you know, Charlie's trying to do it at Notre Dame. So I don't know. Just maybe that's just a little bit of a gut instinct thing. I'm not sure. I think Patriots fans, I don't know, would you be happy with that? To see both, you know, see either one or both come back? If those positions are open? Here's what would be a great thing. If this team could somehow figure out a way to get to the Super Bowl again, and even if they lose, but get back to the Super Bowl again this year, and then in an effort to kind of put it over the top in what could, again, potentially be an uncapped year, bring both of those guys back as assistants. Would fans be sky high around here? I would think so. I absolutely would think so. Interesting topic. We might bring that up for a debate and for another potential topic of conversation here inside the playbook as the season progresses and we see Charlie Weiss's fortunes continue to shrivel and dry up on the vine at Notre Dame. I mean, lose to Navy for the second time in 3 years? Come on! Charlie, come on! No way that should happen. No way. And they're going to get the you-know-what whacked out of them by Pittsburgh this weekend.
Well, I mean, we have a defensive end, and we got two tight ends, and we don't touch the mother.
Yeah, well, Charlie, there's a reason for that. You weren't out there blocking and tackling yourself.
This right thing. Quick out, go, D-swing.
Okay, like the play call. Now let's see a little execution. All right, Marvin in Kernersville, North Carolina. How about that? All right, good stuff here. We're going to wrap up the program with you, Marv. I think that's the last one. Do I have another one besides that? I got to refresh the browser here. He says, yes, John, you are spot on about the red zone. If we don't score touchdowns in the red zone, you can bet that Peyton and the Colts going against our can't-get-to-the-quarterback D-line and our step-too-slow linebackers and our way to much cushion defensive backs will result in Peyton shredding the soft underbelly behind the linebackers and in front of the defensive backs for touchdowns, not field goals. That's how the Colts roll and exactly how they have beaten us the last 4 years. I like you would love to feel good. I like you would love to feel good about being 6-2, but the red zone is holding me back. Yeah. Fair enough. Good stuff. Good stuff. So there you go. All right. Beautiful. What do we have tomorrow? Oh, we got a surprise for tomorrow, potentially, don't we?
Potentially.
Yeah, potential surprise tomorrow. Let me suggest to you, I'd love to be able to tell you who I think it is, or I happen to know who it's going to be, but I don't want to disappoint. Let me just say, tell you that if you are a Patriots fan, if you're a rabid Patriots fan, particularly of recent vintage, you want to be a part of tomorrow's program. And if by some chance you can't be here live with us at 2 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow, you must download the podcast. Right, Hogg?
This is John Hanna, Patriot Hall of Famer. Download the podcast now.
Absolutely. Because it'll be worth it tomorrow. And we will get into more specifics about breaking down the matchups with the Patriots and the Colts tomorrow as well. I already can't wait for Sunday night. Sunday is going to be a very long day waiting for Sunday night's kickoff to come along. Somehow we're going to try to manage to get through it. All right, good job out of the emailers today. I was berating you earlier for not caring, not giving a you-know-what bleep. You did. You came through. Nice job out of you. Let's do it again tomorrow, shall we? St. Pat's time. St. Pat's channel.